Okay, welcome to the class on pitfalls. Topic that can be negative in nature, but I want it to be a positive as well. You know, when I was growing up, our church in Whiteville, Tennessee, have any of you ever been to the church in Whiteville, Tennessee? Okay, one. All right, and I think they've remodeled it since then, but you walk in the entrance, and there were stairs going up into the auditorium, and then on each side of the stairs, there were stairs going down into the basement where we had Sunday school classes and fellowship lunch and things like that. But anyway, as you were going down the steps, there was this beam going across, or the ceiling was right there going down the steps. And I remember growing up, you know, we were just little tykes then, and, you know, every time we would go down the stairs, we would duck our heads, you know, whether we needed to or not. But I remember several times when someone that was taller, you know, just conked his head right on that thing, because it was right just above eye level there where you couldn't see it, but it was still a big danger. And do you think it was the men that lived at the church, or was it men that were visiting? You know, those of us that lived there, we knew about it, and we ducked, again, like I said, whether we needed to or not. But it was the one that didn't know about it that hit it. And so that's the goal today, is to give you a little heads up on some of these beams that you might come across to keep you from getting conked on the head. Our takeaway today is awareness of the common pitfalls is the first step to staying out of them. Another time, there was a man lived in Whiteville who had a fairly long lane going back to his place. And I remember soon after I got my driver's license, I drove over there one time, and I remember it was just like there was potholes here and potholes there going in, and it seemed like it was extremely hard to get in there without getting all shook up. I think, yeah, by the time I got in, if I'd have been a bottle of milk, I'd probably been butter floating on top by the time I got into his house. But I remember his daughter saying something about that her dad, he can drive out without hitting any of the potholes. And that's probably true, because he drove it in and out every day. He knew where the potholes were, and so he could miss them. So hopefully I can make you aware of some of these potholes so you can swerve in time to miss them and not get too shook up. We all heard the saying, you know, the only thing we learn from history is that we don't learn from history. But it doesn't have to be that way for you as teachers. Hope you can learn from some of the mistakes that I have made. So there's five main points that I'd like to look over. First is faulty self-concept. We have ignorance of technique, poor planning, ineffective discipline, and moral failure. So let's look at faulty self-concept. One of my favorite verses in the Bible says, "Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who, being in the form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation, and took upon him the form of a servant, and was made in the likeness of men. And being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself, and became," I'll add my own words here, "a teacher." You know, if Jesus could do that, if he could surrender his reputation, then surely we as teachers can surrender our reputation. You know, I think Peter must have been a school teacher too, because in Acts, when the blind man asked for help, he said, or the lame man, blind man, lame man, asked for help, he said, "Silver and gold have I none." So he must have been a teacher as well. You know, many of these problems, I think, stem back to pride in our hearts that we struggle with. First one is wanting too much to be liked. That's a very real problem that I face. We want our students to like us, right? Who wants to be the teacher that the students don't like? But, and it's okay to want to be liked, that's not wrong, but not at the expense of doing the right thing. You know, can you really be their friend? In the first days of school, Harry Wong says that you should be friendly, be caring, be loving, and sensitive, but do not be their friend. They have enough on their hands with their own friends. See, friends do favors for friends. Can we have extra recess? Can we play for story? Can we skip math class today? They'll never. If you keep saying yes, they'll never stop asking. And then, you know, if you say no, and then they get upset. "I thought you were my friend." And friends don't give each other grades for things. They don't admonish each other about things, and that's what you need to do sometimes. I know it's not fun, but sometimes we need to just sit down with that student and just give them some loving admonition. You know, friends don't discipline other friends. That's the teacher's job. Be the teacher. Be an example for them. You know, if the boys are arguing about which type of truck is the best or which type of tractor is the best, be careful about joining in that debate, because, well, then there's no one to end the argument if it gets out of hand. We so often we fool ourselves into thinking that if we let the students do what they want, then they'll like us. Think back to your teenage years, you know, your parents. Did they always just let you do what you want? Did you always like your parents? I think all of us are honest with ourselves. There's probably times we didn't like our parents, or at least not like what they were doing. But, you know, I look back now and I think, you know, it was the best for me. I know several situations where the parents, this is not teachers now, this is just parents, that they were trying so hard to be their children's friend and not deal with things that needed to be dealt with because they were afraid of losing their children. And they ended up losing their children anyway. It's just not worth it. The second thing is getting discouraged. Proverbs 13 verse 12 says, "Hope deferred maketh the heart sick, but when the desire cometh, it is a tree of life." And that can be if your expectations are too high. Now, we talked about you need to have high expectations, but you can also have expectations that are too high. Like in the romance novels when the handsome young man and the stunningly beautiful girl get married and they live happily ever after. That's not real life. It's very dangerous to think like that. I don't know what you're thinking about your school teaching, but don't expect everything to go perfectly. But again, on the other hand, don't expect everything to go wrong either. But an experienced teacher gave me some advice during my first year of teaching. You know, you'll find that the first year of teaching especially, people will come to you and they'll say, "How's it going?" You know, in the first week or two. Maybe just be careful about answering that. Just tell them, might be too soon to tell. Because sometimes those first few weeks and months can be a little tough to get into groove and get things going. So don't get discouraged if things aren't necessarily going well at the beginning. It takes a while. Don't try to be somebody else. Don't try to copy another teacher. Not all of us can teach like Jonah. We each have our strengths and weaknesses. Just do the best that you can. And again, don't judge yourself by the first few weeks of school. Okay, the third thing is letting little things affect your emotions. And I think that can be more of a lady problem, but I think us men, we probably deal with that as well. The reason that maybe little things don't affect the men as much is because the men don't notice the little things anyway, and the ladies do. When my wife was teaching school, there was one day when a student went outside for some reason. Don't remember exactly what. Maybe it was for recess time. And he came in from recess, and she noticed that his pockets were just bulging. And she's like, "Okay, what do you have in your pockets?" And he showed her, just had a stuff full of acorns that he brought into the classroom. Well, I don't think he was planning to use those to do multiplication, to help him with his multiplication facts. So anyway, she told him, you know, just go outside and get the acorns out of your pockets. And so he went outside obediently, and she went on with her classes, and he didn't come back in. And so she was like, "What's going on here?" So she went to the door and looked out the window, and here he's kind of laying on the ground. He's trying to lift his back end up off the ground, and you know, so the acorns would roll out of the pockets. You know, she could have taken that and think, "Oh, he's just being rebellious and being disobedient," you know. But maybe he was just trying to be funny. You know, boys do that. Be careful about taking it personally, that they're just rebelling against you. You know, another example would be when we have to leave and we have a substitute teacher, or we have to get someone to substitute, and the next day you come back and they're just, "Oh, they're so excited about this," or they're so whatever about the substitute teacher. The substitute teacher was just great, you know, they just And maybe they gave him candy and extra recess, I don't know, whatever substitutes do. And it might feel like they really like the substitute much better than they like me. That's very normal. They will always like the substitute better because that's new and exciting, and the substitute's usually not as strict as what the main teacher is. So it doesn't mean they don't like you or that you're a bad teacher. It just means it's a substitute. The fourth thing is feeling too responsible for the students. It's not your job to carry the students on your back. And it is, I know from experience, it's very depressing sometimes to see failing grades. And yes, we must do something about it, but we can't let those grades make us feel like a failure. Someone once said that games are never won by watching the scoreboard. Don't judge your teaching by the grades that your students are getting. Although, again, it is important, but don't feel like a failure if you are. Teaching is a lot more than just grades. Remember that. It's about teaching character. If you're doing your sustainable best, there's no room for messing around. There's no room for excuses. But do your best, and don't get discouraged if the grades aren't where you think they should be. Remember, even Jesus had a student who failed. Now, that's no excuse to say, well, I got a classroom full of Judases, so I guess I don't have to do any work here. But no, that's no excuse. The last thing is being too perfectionistic. Another problem that teachers sometimes have. And I was curious about your handouts. You know, how many of you are filling out all the blanks in your handouts? Maybe that's a sign. How many of you think that you might be perfectionistic? I know I was. There's nothing wrong. That's a good thing for teachers. But let's be careful with that. And I'm throwing a lot of things out here. Try to maybe just think of a few things that you think you will have a problem with. This is the pothole that I might hit. Remember those things. You can't remember all of these things, but remember, think about the ones that you might especially struggle with. So perfectionistic. What's wrong with being perfectionistic? Most of the time, the problem is it causes us to run out of time because we don't have enough time to study. Teachers are very short on time anyway, and being too perfectionistic can cause you to run out of time getting your work done. You know, if you're checking their work and you're agonizing about whether to count it wrong or maybe half wrong, or we'll just count it a quarter wrong, that can be very time consuming. And is one percentage point really going to make that big of a difference in the end? And then we end up not having enough time to do the important things like studying for the next lesson. And I'm not saying we should be careless, not at all. But just be careful not to be too perfectionistic or become discouraged if things aren't going perfectly. Again, do your sustainable best. And it can be overwhelming for a teacher to think about doing all, you know, teaching all the subject. And I think I've said this before, but, you know, you won't be able to teach everything perfectly the first year. Just focus on one subject, do that well, and then the second year, you can choose a second subject and so on until you've taught 5 years and you can teach all of them well. Another one is resisting advice or not asking for help. There's a story here I'd like to read. "These particular trout are very difficult to catch," he said. "They suck in your fly, sense the hook, and immediately spit it out. You have to set the hook in that split second or he's gone. Do you think you can do that?" "Of course," I replied. "After all, hadn't I caught all kinds of fish in lakes, ponds, and the ocean? Trout fishing in the Colorado Mountains would be a snap." The guide continued his instructions. "If you cast over there and let your fly float downstream about 20 or 30 feet, you'll probably get a few bites." I did as he said, but nothing happened. Within seconds, he said, "You missed one." And a moment later, "There, you missed another one." "What on earth are you talking about? I hadn't felt or seen anything." "You don't believe a couple trout actually bit your hook, do you?" I guess he couldn't miss my look of skepticism. "Let me have your pole and I'll show you what I mean." On the next cast, he caught a big old trout right where my fly had been. Couldn't believe my eyes. Over and over again, our trusty guide worked with us. He would encourage us by saying, "It's in the feel of the pole and the fly's movement in the water. You've got to learn to tempt the trout." Nonetheless, hours went by without my catching a fish, and I was beginning to lose hope. Then all of a sudden, I began to catch those trout right where we had fished earlier. I could now feel the river. Everything he said began to click. What a thrill! Later that afternoon, a young teenager carrying a large red and yellow tackle box climbed down the bank where we were fishing. We smiled encouragingly. But then he took out some large lures used to catch bass and even saltwater fish, but certainly not trout. Our guide worked his way up to the young kid and began to instruct him that those lures didn't appeal to trout, but a certain kind of fly did. That young man told the guide to get lost. He'd fish with his favorite lures, and he'd catch the fish just like he did back home. Soon our guide led us around the bend to a different patch of water that moved much more swiftly. He began to search through his fishing vest for a particular fly. He smiled when he found a couple of them. "These flies are the only ones I know that will catch the trout in this section of the river. I made them last night just for this spot. They're heavy enough to sink into that strong current, and they'll tempt those trout every time." He was right. We changed flies and immediately started catching larger trout. After a while, we returned to where that young man was fishing. He hadn't caught any fish yet and was obviously frustrated. "Stupid fish," he exclaimed. "They just aren't biting. I hate fishing." Proverbs 1:5 says, "A wise man will hear and will increase learning, and a man of understanding shall attain unto wise counsels." Please, please, listen to advice from other teachers. Or if something's not working, ask someone for advice. Like Jonah said, if you can find a mentor to help you, that would be very, very useful. There's another situation which I was aware. There was a school board that came to a teacher and tried to address some shortcomings that in his teaching. And he told them, when I was in school, I had a different teacher every year in school. And now I'm just taking the best of each of those teachers, and that's what I'm doing. That attitude will cause you to fail. As teachers, never be ashamed to beg, borrow, or even steal ideas from other teachers. That's okay. Second main point is ignorance of technique. If you remember the banana that I couldn't get anyone to eat the other day. I think there was actually a story of a person that actually was given a banana, and later he was asked how it was, and he said, that the skin was a little bit tough, but the core was nice and soft. He didn't know how to eat a banana. And sometimes if we don't know how to do something in the right way, it won't turn out very well. One thing that we do sometimes is that we expect books and gadgets to do the teaching for us. Don't blame the books for the students' lack of learning. It's your job as a teacher to teach them. It doesn't matter if you use rod and staff or Christian light. Don't expect the books to do the work for you. You might have to do some review or things like that. Not knowing the sequence of class presentation. So when you have a class, what happens in what order? And do you make the students, what do you have the students do ahead of time? You should have the students read the lesson ahead of time before they come to the class table. That can save a lot of time. If they don't, then they might be totally lost. And sometimes they can even read the lesson, and they can, I told my students to read the lesson, and if they understand it well, then go ahead and do some of the first few problems. And if you don't understand it, then go to the review and work on that until we have class. But at least try, so that they need to learn to learn on their own as well. But always have them read the lesson first, and try to begin with some review as well, so that things are sticking with it, or things are sticking to them. Giving too much or too little work. And this is a really tough one. I talked yesterday about the slow students versus fast students. So you always want to make sure you're giving your students the right amount of work. And often at the beginning, they're working at maximum capacity. So that's a good gauge. Remember, if you think back how much work they were getting at the beginning of the year, and if that slacks off, then you can kind of use that as a gauge to know how much they're getting. How many of y'all like homemade ice cream? When you make ice cream, you put all the ingredients in there and plug it in, or maybe you do it by hand, but the ones you plug in that have a motor, it starts stirring it, and it just has this particular sound to it as it's stirring. And I remember listening for this sound when I was in charge of making it. You just kind of listen for it, and at first it's just spinning nicely, but after a while, when it's about ready, the ice cream, it starts going, and there's a certain sound you know. Now, if you wait too long, you'll probably burn the motor up because it won't be able to spin it anymore. But there's a certain sound you listen for to know the ice cream is ready. And maybe that's the same way with your students. When you hear the student going, then you know they're about maxed out. It's about time to stop. Assigning without motivating. This is one question that I guarantee that every teacher will hear sometime in his teaching career. Why do I have to do this stuff? Why do I have to learn this stuff? When will I ever use this? And be careful about answering that one right away. Most of the time, they don't really want to know. They just don't want to do it. And that can really intimidate a new teacher. So, but as much as possible, do give them an answer for that. Maybe you can have an answer ready ahead of time if you can anticipate them asking the question. You know, give them real-life examples of where they'll use this. How much paint is it going to take to repaint the walls of this classroom? If you have 5 horses and each horse needs 2 acres to graze, how much land do you need? And how much fence will it take? How many feet of fence will it take to fence it in? Give them real-life examples so that they're more motivated to learn it. And again, there will always be some students probably that maybe won't ever, they at least won't appear to understand. They won't admit that they understand or that they think they need to learn it. They just think they don't need to. But then you can always tell them that it's good brain exercise and, you know, your brain needs that exercise. Be careful about thinking for your students. Remember, the one who is working, the one who is thinking, is the one who is learning. It's easy for us as teachers. We just really want to help them. When I was in school one time, we were eating lunch, and I had an orange in my lunch, and as was my custom, I gave it to somebody else to peel for me. And so I gave it to my teacher and asked him if he could peel my orange for me. I was still pretty young, I think. And anyway, I kind of forgot about it, and I was eating my lunch, and after lunch was over, I was like, oh, where's my orange? And I asked Mr. Mark, I said, where's my orange? And he's like, oh, I ate it. He wasn't thinking he peeled it, and then he ate it without thinking about it. You know, sometimes we do have to help peel the orange for our students, but let's be careful not to eat the orange as well. Let them taste that success. Let them, you know, figure out the problem, especially story problems. Let them figure it out themselves. Maybe you can give them a few clues here and there, but don't ever tell them the answers. You know, we talked about being a candy machine where you put in quarters and get out gumballs. Don't be a gumball machine. They will go broke, and you'll be the one with all the wealth. So make sure that they are thinking. And sometimes maybe you just need to tell them to, if they're looking at a story problem and they aren't saying anything and you aren't saying anything, it's hard to know what's going on. So maybe tell them just to, you know, think out loud. Tell me what you're thinking about this problem. How do we need to solve this? Okay, the third main point is poor planning. Neglecting important things to do urgent things. Let me give you an example. You're on the way to the airport. You're running a bit late. Halfway there, you notice that you're almost out of fuel. What do you do? Which is more important? Do you stop to fill up with fuel or just hope you can somehow make it to the airport in time so you don't miss your flight? You know, catching your flight may seem a very urgent thing to do. But if you run out of fuel, then you won't get there anyway. And that can be like, you know, school duties can seem very, very urgent. Maybe, you know, checking work or things like that. But which is more important? What about having your morning devotions in the morning before you go? Is that okay just to skip that so you can get those urgent things done? What about going to prayer meeting? Maybe you do have a lot of work after school and things like that. Are you just going to skip going to prayer meeting because you have something urgent to do? Or maybe it's after school and your co-teacher walks in the room and she's just got something on her heart that she needs to share. Maybe it's not even school related. Are you going to take time to talk with her and just put your work away for the time? Failing to allow for the unexpected. One thing with that is make sure you try the, if you're doing an experiment, make sure you try it yourself first. When I was teaching school, we were going through the Chronicles of Narnia, and there was one book that talks about Turkish delight. And so we decided we're going to make Turkish delight. And so I brought the ingredients to school, and I thought, well, we can, you know, this should be pretty easy to make. I don't need to try this myself. And so we tried to make Turkish delight, and I didn't realize that to take so long for that sugar water to get thick. And we just kind of rushed through it, and it turned out to be a Turkish undelight. It was very runny and did not turn out well. So maybe, you know, try it yourself. And like the time that I was driving to school with my iced coffee that spilled, you know, sometimes things happen we aren't aware of. Let's make sure we allow time for those things so they don't mess us up. And again, not planning in enough detail. Like when you're studying for your lessons, make sure you do some of the problems yourself first so that you know it's going to work. Don't just glance over it. The fourth thing is ineffective discipline. You know, are we afraid to discipline because we're scared the students won't like us? And I said this before, but again, that's one of our problems. Sometimes we're afraid to discipline because we're scared the students won't like us. The students actually want you to take charge of the classroom. They expect you to deal with misbehavior. If you don't do that, you will lose their respect. I remember at one of my first, or a PTA that I was at, I remember there was one boy that I had dealt with a couple times, and I remember the dad telling me at PTA, this dad had actually had four children in my classroom, and the brother of the boy that I had dealt with just had told his dad that he just really appreciated the way I didn't let younger brother get by with something, because he said that's, you know, it just made for an more orderly classroom. They actually do expect you, even the ones that are bad themselves, they expect that you're going to do something. Maybe when you don't, maybe they're a little bit disappointed. I don't know. They probably wouldn't admit that, but make sure you just deal with it. Another thing is adding rules or procedures after problems arise. Do any of you raise dogs for sale? Okay. Do y'all cut off their tails? You don't? How do you do it? Huh? Do you leave them on? Okay. That's, you know, something that some people do, I guess. Maybe they don't do it anymore. I'm not sure. But, you know, they cut off their tails so they look cuter or whatever. Imagine how it would be if you would just, maybe after they're a couple weeks old, cut off an inch of it. And then maybe at a month, cut off another inch and keep cutting off an inch at a time. That sounds very, very painful. But sometimes in school, we do that with rules. We see a problem here, and so we make a rule. You know, maybe they're messing around coming in from recess, and so we make a rule. No, you have to be in your seat after 6 minutes. And then something else happens. They start racing out of the classroom. So we make another rule. And, you know, like Melvin said, we make a rule. Thou shalt not press against thy neighbor during class time at the class table. You know, we're cutting off that tail a little bit of time. You know, we don't want to be too strict, so we don't want to do a lot of it at the beginning. But it's much better just to cut off that whole tail at the beginning of the school year. Get your procedures in place at the beginning of the school year, and don't just keep adding them as problems come up. Again, it might feel like you're being a really strict teacher at the beginning, but it's a whole lot better to start that way than to add things, cut off that tail an inch at a time. The third thing is over-lecturing instead of disciplining. You know, maybe we have an incident recess where Johnny is just throws a fit about his team losing, and you tell him to go inside and you say, Johnny, you know it's wrong to get mad when your team is losing. And he's like, yeah. So you're not going to do that again, right? Oh, great, problem solved. And maybe that's okay for the first time. But don't do that too much. Sometimes you need to just deal with it. Postponing the discipline only causes the student to lose respect for you. And like a disease, it will spread to other students, like being poor sports or disrespect. Those are some things that you need to deal with. And again, I'm not saying maybe you can just talk to him the first time, but if it happens again, make sure you deal with it. Don't ever ignore it. I'm not sure what book it is, but Brian Tracy said, when you must eat a frog, get it done. You know, I'm sure none of us would want to eat a frog, but if you do have to do it right away. And if there's two frogs, eat the ugly frog first. It does not get any easier by ignoring it or anticipating it. Most times it gets worse. Take care of it. D is trusting the students too much. I had a fourth grader who was just the sweetest little girl, and I didn't think she could do anything wrong. But later, I found out there was a situation where her and another girl were sitting side by side, and I guess she was having trouble with one problem, and so she slid her paper underneath the divider of the desk, and her, I guess she had a little note on there to help her or something, and so she and her friend was, her cousin was writing in the answer for her on her book. You know, they can look like little angels, but they're 100% human. The Bible says, watch and pray. And sometimes you need to do that during prayer. You have to watch and pray. You might learn some things. I know one teacher that said he decided to do that, and he saw one of his students standing on their head, on their desk during prayer. So I hope they don't do that, but sometimes it's better to watch and pray. Not communicating with parents or school board. And I know it's scary to talk to parents, right? But his dad's the bishop! You know, we're scared to talk with parents. But that they're on our side. When you talk with them, include positive and negative feedback. One thing that I think we should do is just make a goal to talk with at least one of the parents every week about their child. Maybe, you know, like I said, give two positive things and one negative thing. If you need to share something negative, make sure you tell them both. Be quick to talk with them. It's way better to do that than letting little things stack up. And then suddenly in PTA, we just pour it all out on the parents. And they're like, whoa, here, you know. Why didn't you come talk to me sooner? They really don't care. I don't think they mind. Especially as a parent now, my oldest is about to go to first grade. And I'm hoping that the teacher will communicate with us as much as possible. I want to know. I think most parents would be like that. Now I lost my place. Which main point did we do last?
Not communicating with parents or school board head of discipline.
Okay, and that's in the which main section?
Four.
Okay. Did y'all get everything filled in so far on your? Do you have any questions? Okay, so we're ready for moral failure. And this can be a difficult one to talk about, but is that right? Okay. What you do outside the classroom does affect your teaching. There was a man that I knew. He was bishop of his church, and there were some things going on in the church that needed to be dealt with, and he was trying to deal with this thing, and just seemed like he wasn't able to get anywhere. And he came to the church, and he just confessed that he was failing morally. And I know it was extremely hard for him because he was the bishop of the church, and he could have thought, you know, what are people going to think of me if I do this? He had to lay down his reputation. And he came, brought it to the church, and the church decided that he should resign as bishop and not be on the ministerial team. Back, I think he went on pruning for a bit. And it wasn't something, no one else was involved in this situation. But he was unable to deal with the problems that he was in other people's lives with this moral failure looming in his own life. And he said he's willing to do whatever it takes to be right with God. The Bible says in Psalm 66:18, if I regard iniquity in my heart, the Lord will not hear me. Moral failure is a stronghold that the devil will use to render you powerless as a teacher. Find some help if you're experiencing that. It's like this mirror.
This a really bright light. See if I can get a few people in the eyes here. This would be a great light, wouldn't it, to take into a dark room? Really? You know, the minute we step out of the light, if we're walking in the light, then we make a great light. But at the minute we step out of the light, we're only reflectors. We do not produce any of our own light. We're not a flashlight. We cannot produce our own light. Maybe we can try. We can barely even see the light. Maybe we try to produce our own light sometimes. Maybe we get it pretty bright sometimes. But in reality, it's nothing like the real thing. When we take our eyes off Jesus, we will no longer be able to shine his light. And I was just struck with that, especially in this situation, is if we're experiencing failure in our moral lives, even if we think, and I think on your handout, the one thing was we will be powerless. It's not like we might be if we're, you know, we think, if no one else is involved, then it doesn't matter, right? It's just something, but no, it will affect your teaching. It will blind you, and it will make you powerless when you're dealing with an issue. You won't be able to deal with your students' issues if you are facing moral failure. So get help. It's something that it may be hard to do, but if you aren't willing to surrender your reputation, it's going to do far more damage. This man that I was talking about, he just passed away in February of this year. And I had the confidence that he was ready to go when he died. And there were, I think, many people that were blessed by his willingness to just humble himself and do whatever it took to make things right. And then we can have power in our lives. All right, the last point, the exciting part, is the advantages of first-year teachers. So what are the advantages of a first-year teacher? There are lots of advantages. The first thing is freshness. Everything is fresh and exciting to first-year teachers usually. You know, you're learning with them. And here's the best part. The students usually behave very well for the first few weeks. They really want to please you. And they're excited about this. Everything is new, like I said. Don't lose that. That's something that's, yeah, I remember how that was, and yeah, sometimes I miss that part of it. The second thing is a willingness to learn. Usually first-year teachers are very willing to learn, and if you're not that way, please get that way, because that's just what you need. You know, like I said, never be ashamed to beg, borrow, or steal ideas from other teachers. Listen to others for advice. And during WFTI, there's lots of things you'll hear. Maybe you'll feel like you're drinking from a fire hydrant. There's so many things. But listen to advice from others. The third thing is a positive attitude. First-year teachers usually have a very positive attitude. And here's a quote from Jonathan Erb that I really like. He said, "Some of us that have been in this business for a long time need a checkup from the neck up. We have some... There's some stinking thinking in there that affects our attitudes. Sometimes more experienced teachers tend to get cynical. We see these things, you know, human nature is the same all the world round. We see these things over and over again. We get a little bit cynical about it, and we lose our positive attitude about things. In closing, you know, you're going to make mistakes. We all make mistakes. And if you remember that story about the lane with the potholes, you know, there's one comforting thing about the potholes. You can't hit them all. So don't get discouraged. The only dumb mistake is the one that you just keep on making. Or maybe the one that someone gave you some advice and you didn't listen to it. Learn from your mistakes. Listen to the advice of others. Stop, look, and listen. And pray often. We need God to get through this. Like I said, if something's not right in our lives with God, if something's not right in our personal lives, make that right before you walk into the classroom. You know, if you have to call the school board and tell them
I'm just not, or maybe your co-teacher to step in for you. Get that settled with God before you go in to try to teach your classroom. Again, the takeaway is awareness of the common pitfalls is the first step to staying out of them. And I know we went over a lot of them, but maybe just pick a few that you think you might struggle with, and just keep those things in mind. Thanks for your attention, and you're dismissed.